This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Aaron Faust? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Aaron Christopher Faust was born on July 28, 1972, in Macon, Tennessee. He was raised near Fort Worth, Texas. Aaron was the only child of Robert Faust and Robert's wife, Carolyn. In 1977, Aaron's parents divorced, and he stayed with his father. Robert remarried the same year as the divorce. The marriage lasted for about 10 years. According to Robert, Aaron was normal until he was 4 years old. After this, Aaron had one behavioral problem after the other. When he was about 4 and a half, Aaron wandered off with the family dog. He called from a restaurant a few miles away. About a month later, Aaron wandered off again. This time he was found sitting on someone's porch. Aaron stayed with a babysitter as his father worked. On one occasion, Aaron attempted to strangle the babysitter's cat. The cat survived. Aaron was unable or unwilling to explain his behavior and did not have any remorse. One time when Aaron was about 6 years old, his father found him sitting in a doghouse in the backyard. It was about 40 degrees outside. Aaron appeared to be in a trance. This happened a few more times over the course of about a week. By the time Aaron was 8 years old, his father wondered if his son may have been possessed by a demon. As Aaron progressed through school, he found himself in trouble frequently, sometimes for fighting. On one occasion, he broke a bone in his hand while attacking another student. Aaron had no remorse and justified his behavior by suggesting that his victim was a bully and deserved it. When Aaron was 14 years old, he was arrested after attempting to steal a car. At the age of 15, he was caught in school with a knife after engaging in a fight. At this point, he went to live with his mother in Iowa, but that did not improve his behavior. At the age of 18, he was arrested after causing a high-speed chase with the police. Aaron moved back to Texas and lived with his father. Eventually, he moved into an apartment and was employed. At various times, Aaron was a welder, a carpenter, and a drug dealer. In February 1997, he was pulled over after driving with his headlights off. The police found that he was in the possession of a butterfly knife, a baseball bat, two magazines for a pistol, and shotgun shells. In April 1997, Aaron punched the girlfriend of an acquaintance in the face and physically attacked a neighbor who attempted to intervene. As the police were arresting him for assault, Aaron was screaming. He was threatening and aggressive during the whole process. At one point, he pointed to a police officer and said, quote, "When I get out, I'm going to kill you," unquote. During another incident when he was in jail, he threw a razor blade at a corrections officer. I imagine this incident made the jail rethink their policy of having frequent razor blade giveaway days. Aaron was released from jail on May 16, 1997. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On May 18, 1997, 2 days after Aaron Faust was released from jail, he decided to visit an acquaintance of his named David Ward. Aaron was angry with David because David refused to bail him out of jail. In addition, Aaron needed money to pay for his attorneys. He thought he could get that money from David. Allegedly, David owed Aaron $500 for drugs that Aaron had sold to him. According to Aaron, David would use these drugs to entice young black men to visit his house for all-night parties. Aaron and a man named Jamal Brown were given a ride to David's residence, and David let them in. When Aaron asked for the $500, David refused to give it to him. At this point, Aaron attacked David and bound his wrists and ankles with speaker wire. He took David's ATM card, left the residence, and attempted to withdraw money. After failing at this, he returned to David's home and strangled David with his hands and arms. Aaron also held a pillow over David's face and stepped on his neck in an effort to break it. As Aaron was murdering David, Jamal was busy loading stolen items into David's BMW. After the homicide, Aaron and Jamal put graffiti on the walls of David's residence to make it look like the crime was related to a gang. They left in David's BMW and later set the vehicle on fire. It was not very difficult to figure out who was responsible for the murder. The police arrested Aaron and Jamal a few days later after they attempted to use David's credit card at a restaurant in Arlington, Texas. Aaron confessed to the murder. He said that he didn't mean to kill David. Rather, he was just trying to render him unconscious. Jamal said that he witnessed Aaron kill David, but had nothing to do with the murder. The police discovered evidence that Aaron had planned the crime in advance. He had specifically mentioned murdering a man, stealing his money, stealing his BMW, and making it look like a gang committed the murder. Aaron was charged with murder. Less than a year later, on April 14, 1998, he was convicted. 3 days later, he was sentenced to death. Ultimately, Jamal was convicted of robbery and sentenced to 20 years in prison. Considering he was engaging in a felony when the murder occurred, Jamal should consider himself quite fortunate. Being on death row was not a happy experience for Aaron, mostly because of the execution part. In addition, he did not want to spend the rest of his life without having sex with a woman. In an effort to speed up his demise, Aaron sent a letter to the court indicating that he did not wish to appeal his conviction or sentence. The court reviewed Aaron's request and decided that it had been made voluntarily and intelligently. Aaron received his wish. There would be no appeal, and his death would come relatively quickly. In Texas, the average amount of time a condemned prisoner stays on death row before being executed is about 10 years. Aaron managed to get executed on April 28, 1999, only a year from when he was convicted. His last words were, quote, "Adios, amigos. I'll see you all on the other side. I'm ready when you all are," unquote.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
I'm an American vigilante. I have a question for you. What would you do if someone you cared about was abducted, taken from you? Would you call me? Would you care about how I got them back? Download American Vigilante now.
I'm moving to my analysis. Here are my thoughts in a few areas that stood out to me in this case. Item number one. During his trial, Aaron stood out for being incredibly arrogant. He blew kisses at the jury, rocked back and forth in his chair, and frequently smiled. During one point in the trial, when someone was counting how many bottles of liquor Aaron had stolen, he leaned over to his attorney and said, quote, "Killing makes you thirsty," unquote. When he was found guilty, Aaron laughed. Item number two, Aaron made a few statements in the time leading up to his execution. He recognized that he did not feel any remorse. He indicated that sometimes he wished he did kind of feel something. Aaron said, quote, "The bottom line is, if I was the type to feel remorseful, I wouldn't have done this in the first place. It takes a good deal of determination to put a man in a chokehold and choke the life out of him," unquote. Aaron continued by casting aspersions at his murder victim by saying, quote, "I didn't like the guy. Mostly it was his attitude. He had a real arrogant, snobbish kind of attitude. Here's a guy who's got a blank good job, education. He's got this attitude. He's better than me. It seems like to me, he's worse than me. He thought he was untouchable," unquote. As I mentioned, Aaron had claimed that David owed him $500. He said, quote, "The situation with Mr. Ward, it was just business. He entered into a contract with me. Obviously, I couldn't take him to court," unquote. When Aaron was asked what he might say to the victim's brother, he said, quote, "Adios, what's to say? I don't know them. If I felt sorry for what I did, I would say so, but I don't," unquote. Item number three. Throughout his life, Aaron had seen many different mental health clinicians. At the age of 18, he was diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder, or ASPD. This is a cluster B personality disorder, so it's in the same cluster as narcissistic, borderline, and histrionic. ASPD has 7 symptom criteria: repeated unlawful behaviors, consistent deceitfulness, impulsivity, aggressiveness, a reckless disregard for safety, consistent irresponsibility, and a lack of remorse. Only 3 symptoms are needed for a diagnosis of ASPD, and it appears as though Aaron had all 7. The prevalence of this disorder in the population is about 3.6%, although 60 to 70% of prisoners qualify for this diagnosis. One of the strongest predictors of ASPD is aggression. A child who is chronically aggressive is 27 times as likely to develop ASPD as one who is not. The median survival time for a person with ASPD is 13 years less than a person without it. In Aaron's case, that shortened survival time would have been pretty good, considering he died at only age 26. Item number 4. It appears as though Aaron's father, Robert, tried to help him. He was quite frustrated with Aaron and did not know what to do. Robert took Aaron to see mental health clinicians, but none of them were helpful. At one point, Robert said that he briefly considered murdering Aaron because he was worried about Aaron murdering someone else. That's how bad Aaron's behavior was. It was clear that Aaron was going to get more dangerous. Robert, of course, dismissed this homicidal idea. Instead, he prayed and decided to give Aaron to God. Typically, a man with ASPD would not have a good relationship with his father. Aaron's case is different. He appeared to value his father. As Aaron was awaiting execution, he sent Robert a poem for Father's Day. Aaron talked about how he only knew misfortune and pain and only connected with a world of darkness and sin. He said, quote, "All my life I've never been able to keep a friend, but Dad, you've been true blue to the bitter end. As a father, you've been a real treasure. You tried to take away the pain and bring pleasure. My life has been full of sadness and my mind clouded with madness. But when it's all said and done and I'm laid to rest, I hope you'll know you did your best," unquote. It sounds like Aaron wanted to free his father from any feelings of guilt or shame, which is curious because Aaron didn't have those feelings himself. This indicates that Aaron appreciated the concepts at the cognitive level. Item number 5, what do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Aaron Faust had characteristics of both factor 1 and factor 2 psychopathy. He was deceptive, manipulative, charismatic, dominant, fearless, cold, calculating, impulsive, irresponsible, and frequently committed crimes. Aaron never appreciated the consequences of his behavior. When he was sentenced to death, Aaron turned to religion. Specifically, he became a Christian. He came to believe that when he died, he would ascend to heaven and experience joy for eternity. As a psychopath, Aaron was good at making calculations. His decision to die was nothing more than a calculation consistent with his hedonism. Based on his belief that he would go to heaven, he realized that dying soon was a better deal than waiting years to be executed. What was the point of suffering in prison when death would lead to paradise? Aaron wanted to die in order to obtain pleasure. When asked about his impending execution, he said, quote, "I can't wait. Death has never scared me, especially knowing that now I will be going to heaven," unquote. In a strange way, I believe that Aaron's execution made sense to him. He had always justified his bad acts by saying his victims deserved to suffer because they were evil. When he viewed himself as evil, he believed that his execution was fair. He thought that it would even the score and settle the matter as far as his moral responsibility for the murder. I think he was really looking forward to being executed in order to be granted the keys to the gates of heaven. Some people believe that Aaron was handed a set of keys for a much warmer destination. Now, moving to my final thoughts. Aaron never had remorse, although he did understand that he should have it. He realized how unusual it was for the remorse to be absent. I think this illustrates quite well how frustrating it can be for family members, mental health clinicians, law enforcement officers, and others to deal with individuals who have personality disorders. The lack of insight can be so profound that there is no common language. Normal behavior is completely foreign to some people who suffer from personality pathology. If someone has never experienced remorse, explaining it to them will only do so much. They may come to understand it cognitively, but it will never make sense to them emotionally.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars Longa, Vita Brevis.
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, terror takes center stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.